Greetings, and welcome to Bear Soup with Ron Serratia. We have a brilliant program this week, so my dear bears, chubs, cubs, chasers, muscle bears, otters, wolves, etc., settle down and listen up. First, we have an update on Turkish gay bear Ahmet Yildiz. Smokey the Bear turned 65 this year, and for an old bear, he's looking damn sexy. The first part of Fairies and Bears, a talk I gave at the Metro College Human Sexuality Lecture Series. More bad news for four-legged bears. Announcements, shoutouts, and the usual furbulous puns and miscellaneous ursine audio blah-de-blah. It's all the news that bears repeating, and then some. You're just in time for Bear Soup. Listening to episode number 58 of the Bear Soup podcast, streaming online at bearradio.net, Mondays and Wednesdays, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific times. Also available by subscription on iTunes. Archives can be found under the Bear Soup tab on the Bear Soup blog at ronserratia.com. That's spelled R-O-N-S-U-R-E-S-H-A. And this episode has been a bit late coming out. For that, I apologize. I've been having technical challenges, let's call them, and I hope to resolve them soon. This is your host, Mr. Bear of the Year 2008. According to the independent poll taken by our friends at The Complete Bear, casting my pod to you through the mysterious tubes of the internets from New London, Connecticut. Bubbles and rubber duckies for the Bear Soup Hot Tub are provided by Bear Bones Books, our sponsor. Check out their fine titles by bear authors at barebonesbooks.com. That's spelled BearBonesBooks.com. No rubber duckies were harmed in the making of this podcast. We have breaking news in the story of Ahmet Yildiz, the Turkish gay bear murdered in a so-called honor killing. An article entitled Soul Searching in Turkey After a Gay Man is Killed, written by Dan Bilevsky and published in the New York Times on November 25, 2009. It says, for Ahmet Yildiz, a stocky and affable 26-year-old, the choice to live openly as a gay man proved deadly. Prosecutors say his own father hunted him down, traveling more than 600 miles from his hometown to shoot his son in an old neighborhood of Istanbul. Mr. Yildiz was killed 16 months ago, the victim of what sociologists say is the first gay honor killing in Turkey to surface publicly. He was shot 5 times as he left his apartment to buy ice cream. A witness said dozens of neighbors watched the killing from their windows but refused to come forward. His body remained unclaimed by his family, a grievous fate under Muslim custom. His father, Yahya Yildiz, whose trial in absentia began in September, is on the run and believed to be hiding in northern Iraq. The case, which has caused a bout of national soul-searching, has underlined the tensions between the secular modern Turkey of cross-dressing pop stars and a more traditionalist Turkey in which conservative Islam increasingly holds sway. Ahmet Kaya, Ahmet Yildiz's cousin, said Mr. Yildiz was the only son of a deeply religious and wealthy Kurdish family in the predominantly Kurdish southeast. Mr. Kaya said Mr. Yildiz, a straight-A physics student who had hoped to become a teacher, was tutoring fellow students so he could make extra money to live independently. But by coming out as gay in a patriarchal tribal family, he had become the ultimate affront to both religious and filial honor, even with parents who adored him. Quote, Ahmet's father had warned him to return to their village and to see a doctor and imam in order to cure him of his homosexuality and get married, but Ahmet refused, Mr. Kaya said. Ahmet loved his family more than anything else, and he was tortured about disappointing them, but in the end, he decided to be who he was, end quote. That clash of values permeates Turkish society. While Turkey's aspiration to join the EU is pushing the Muslim-inspired government to accept and even promote civil liberties for women and homosexuals, some traditionalists remain ill at ease with a permissive attitude towards sexuality and gender roles. Until recently, so-called honor killings have been largely confined to women, who face being killed by male relatives for perceived grievances ranging from consensual sex outside of marriage to stealing a glance at a boy. A recent government survey estimated that one person dies every week in Istanbul as a result of honor killings, while the United Nations estimates the practice globally claims as many as 5,000 lives a year. In Turkey, relatives convicted in such killings are subject to life sentences. A sociologist who studies honor killings, Mazhar Bagli, at Dikle University in Diyarbakir, the largest city in the southeast, noted that tribal Kurdish families that kill daughters perceived to have dishonored them publicized the murders to help cleanse their shame. But he said gay honor killings remained underground because a homosexual not only brought shame to his family, but also tainted the concept of male identity upon which the community's social structure depended. Quote, "Until now, gay honor killings have been invisible because homosexuality is taboo," he said. Gay rights groups argue that there is an increasingly open homophobia in Turkey. The military, which is the guardian of Turkey's secular state, regards homosexuality as a disorder. Last year, a local Istanbul court ruled in favor of disbanding the offices of Lambda, the country's leading gay rights group, after a complaint that it offended public morality. The decision was later overturned by higher court. Firat Soyli, a human rights lawyer for Lambda, who was advising Mr. Yildiz before his death, said that 3 months before the murder, Mr. Yildiz had filed a complaint at the local prosecutor's office that he was receiving death threats from his family. Mr. Soyli said that the prosecutor's office had refused to investigate or provide Mr. Yildiz with production. The local police and prosecutors declined to comment on the allegation because the case was continuing. The murder has divided Mr. Yildiz's neighbors in Uskandar, an old Ottoman district on the Bosporus in Istanbul, where secular and religious Turks live side by side. Umhan Darama, a neighbor of Mr. Yildiz, was shot in the ankle during the attack and has filed criminal charges against his father. She said that the police had visited her in the hospital after the episode, urging her to drop the charges and to avoid becoming involved in what they called a dirty crime. Mrs. Darama, a religious Muslim who wears a gold satin headscarf, said she was the only one among her neighbors willing to testify. Quote, "The police and local religious officials are trying to protect the killer because they think homosexuality is a sin," she said. "But in Islam, killing is an even bigger sin, and no one but Allah has the right to decide between life and death. Ahmet was a nice, gentle boy, and he didn't deserve to die." Unquote. But Kemal, 55, a Kurdish man newly arrived to the district from the southeast who declined to give his last name, said he would disown his son if he found out he was gay. Quote, "I would kick him out of the house and he would no longer be my son," he said, fingering his prayer beads. Even as some gay groups have sought to blame encroaching Islamic conservatism for Mr. Yildiz's death, others argue that Turkish society is actually becoming more sexually liberated. Nilüfer Narli, a sociologist who has studied gender issues, noted that gay clubs and gay bars have proliferated in big cities like Istanbul. And in fact, I have been to one. She said homosexuality in Turkey has been tolerated since Ottoman times. One of Turkey's most celebrated singers is Bülent Ersoy, a transsexual who was banned by the military government in the 1980s but has since become more popular as a woman than she was as a man. "It is a cliché that Turkey is homophobic," Ms. Narli said. "There has been a rise in religious conservatism, but at the same time, because of globalization, people are more accepting now of different values than they have ever been." That acceptance, however, has not always filtered down to Turkey's religious heartland with sometimes deadly consequences. Didar Erdal, a 23-year-old gay man from Mr. Yildiz's hometown, recently fled Istanbul for the Netherlands out of fear that his own family was hunting him. Mr. Erdal said that his family had learned he was gay last month after he applied for an exemption from military service on the grounds of his sexuality. He said his father had gone crazy and ordered him home, where the tribe's elders would decide his fate. Quote, "I know all too well," Mr. Erdal said. "What the tradition demands must happen to me." And that was from an article entitled "Soul Searching in Turkey After a Gay Man is Killed." Smokey Bear turned 65 this year. Happy birthday, Smokey! For an old bear, he's still looking pretty damn sexy. Though the dude ain't chill. He's pictured very much like a half-bear, half-human muscle bear in several new, clever, digitally animated 65th birthday TV public service announcements called Get Your Smokey On. Here's some audio.
Get Your Smokey On. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference. Because 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
So please, Bear Soup listeners, take the pledge and repeat after me. I pledge to be smart whenever I go outdoors. To use caution and common sense before lighting any fire. To understand that any fire I or my friends create could become a wildfire. To understand and practice proper guidelines whenever I or my friends create a fire outdoors. To never ever leave any fire unattended. To make sure any fire that I or my friends create is properly and completely extinguished before moving on. Got that one? To properly extinguish and discard of smoking materials. To be aware of my surroundings and careful when operating equipment during periods of dry or hot weather. To speak up and step in when I see someone in danger of starting a wildfire. And that's it. So, well, thank you. We have all just gotten our Smokey on. If you'd like to get yours on some more, please go to SmokeyBear.com. That's SmokeyBear.com. And happy birthday, Smokey! The following is the first part of a presentation that I made at Mitchell College here in New London as part of their Human Sexuality lecture series entitled Fairies and Bears, Homomasculinities and Homofeminism. Welcome, and thanks to Professor Broccoli for inviting me, and thanks for your interest in this topic. I'm quite honored to be asked to speak about an aspect of my work as an independent masculinities scholar and author of several books on gay and bisexual male subcultures. My website, by the way, if you're interested, is ronsurasha.com. That's ronsurasha.com. I also have a Facebook page. And I'd like to point out that there are copies of my books on the table in front here that you can take a look at after the talk. The topic is Bears and Fairies, Homomasculinities and Homofeminism. That's a mouthful. It concerns itself with the study and theory of queer masculinities. It's a specialty split between the fields of men's studies and queer or gender studies. First, I'll give some background on each of these two groups, and then we'll explore both groups' expressions of homomasculinity, and we'll go through some of the relevant vocabulary for bears, and then we'll draw some comparisons and conclusions. I'm sure the material will stimulate some questions, and there'll be plenty of time for those after. First, we have the radical fairies. Fairies, in this case, a singular one, is spelled F-A-E-R-I-E, and these are referred to as radical fairies, also fays, F-A-E-S. In 1979, I read in a copy of RFD magazine, which predates the radical fairy movement by several years, and I happen to have a cap with their logo on it, which, as you can see, says RFD, and pictured above it is a pansy. So I read in RFD about the convergence of a special group of gay men being called to a conference. I was very attracted to the idea of an intentional community of gay men who celebrated their spirit and nurtured and loved each other in a community. I was originally planning to attend the fairy gathering with a friend, but I ended up attending a spiritual retreat in New York instead. Fairies are a loosely affiliated worldwide network of queer people seeking to reject hetero-imitation and to redefine gay male identity. Many are also pagans or members of other counterculture movements. The movement started in the U.S. among gay men in the 1970s as part of the so-called sexual revolution. The fairies traced the origin of their movement's name to this spiritual conference for radical fairies in 1979 that was held in Benson, Arizona. The call for the spiritual conference was done by Harry Hay and Hay's longtime companion, John Burnside, and Don Kilhefner, and Mitch Walker is sometimes also credited with being a founding father of the radical fairies. Harry Hay was an interesting character. He lived from 1912 until 2002. A teacher, labor advocate, and early leader in the American lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender rights movement, the LGBT rights movement. Drawing on his background in the Communist Party, Hay co-founded the Mattachine Society in 1950, which was the first enduring LGBT rights organization in the U.S. Originally consisting of gay men, the Radical Fairy social movement spread throughout the world over the past three decades since, in tandem with the larger gay rights movement, challenging commercialization and patriarchal aspects of modern queer and mainstream life, while celebrating pagan constructs and rituals. Radical fairies today also embody a very wide range of genders and sexual orientations, and most sanctuaries are open to all, though acceptance of non-males in the community is hard-earned. They adapt rural living and environmentally sustainable concepts to modern technologies as part of their creative expression. Many are also longtime vegans or vegetarians and ecology-conscious or eco-activists. Radical fairy communities are generally inspired by Aboriginal, Native, Indigenous, or traditional spiritualities, especially those that incorporate genderqueer sensibility. Fairies tend to be fiercely independent, anti-establishment, and community-focused. So then, the term fairies has come to define certain gay and bisexual males and personal identification with homofeminism and genderfuck, and the subculture in which these fairies, these men, socialize. The name The Radical Fairies was carefully constructed with the intent of reclaiming a derogatory term for homosexuals, fairies, while rejecting adopted notions of how queer men should behave. The prefix radical was added to describe the group's political bent, which was informed from the beginning by Hayes' communistic leanings. Fusing anarchism, communitarian living, green ecology, North American Native spiritual practices, the Radical Fairies sought to generate these practices that would foster a space of gay-centeredness in which queer men could fully develop as whole beings, away from the typical mainstream oppressive Judeo-Christian ideas of who or what a homosexual was supposed to be. While the fairies have always emphasized creating a celebratory, fantasy-oriented free space, their core intent remains sober, a sociological strategy to make an institutionally complete subculture, providing all elements needed to sustain it, with a queer-specific spirituality at the core. Although the fairies still don't subscribe to any particular set of dogmas or religious structures, it's still nonetheless a distinct tradition that has come into its own over the past few decades. It's generally accepted as a henotheistic system, meaning that there's one specific force or deity from which all others precipitate, a god usually associated with Cernunnos, Pan, or another horned Priapic male deity, and a goddess recognized as a divine mother, a gender variant male, or warrior or Kali-like destroyer, Kali, the Hindu goddess. This seemingly hetero-binary pantheon is actually considered to reflect both sides of every human's psyche, with gender and sexuality being fluid. Appropriately, fairy gatherings also often involve ritualistic dismantling of gender barriers, gender transformation, and celebrations of both the hypermasculine and the hyperfeminine. Their lack of an ascribed beliefs system has allowed the radical fairies to evolve into more of a support network for queer spiritual pursuits than a religious calling per se. In the past decade, many women have joined or founded their own fairy circles. Similarly, refusing to be pinned down politically or in terms of gender, the fairy tradition still maintains its anarchic roots and a commitment to deep, ecological or green politics, sometimes referred to as the Lavender Green Movement. Many of the Fae, as some like to refer to themselves, have purchased farms and communal land throughout North America to make safe havens, sanctuaries. These are alternative agrarian living spaces for queer men and a few women who wish to pursue their magical development in a more progressive surrounding, with a heavy emphasis on nature-based rituals. Most of these sanctuaries welcome visitors for celebrations of each of the major pagan holidays. The spirited individualism and anarchic demeanor of fairy community households often slows down its consensus-based decision-making process, and this horizontally organized volunteerism means that these communities have been much slower to grow than those of the bears, whose group processes tend to be more hierarchical and temporal. The heart circle is a central tool of the radical fairy way of life, and it arose from the idea of consensus as developed in democratic and feminist thinking. Heart circle is informed by a theoretical opposition to hierarchy, which is drawn from feminism, from radical politics, and from Hayes' idea of subject-subject consciousness, as opposed to a subject-object consciousness, which is how most of us relate to each other in normal everyday life. Heart circle includes aspects of various therapy, human potential, and consciousness-raising spaces. At gatherings, this group process forms for discussion, emotional processing, and emotional healing. Heart circle is a place to share thoughts and feelings, to make decisions, to heal, and to develop one's own understanding of what it means to be a queer person. It can also be a place of confrontation, unflinching examination of one's deepest beliefs, understandings, and faults. Disagreement, rooted in a contrarian tradition of some Plains Indian tribes, is a radical fairy first principle. Informality, spontaneity, acceptance, and flamboyance of dress, as well as undress, are the norm at these fairy gatherings, which are held across the world. Several dozen radical fairy sanctuaries, rural land or urban buildings where fairies have come together to live a communal life, now exist in North America, Europe, and Australia. This has been the first part of the talk, Fairies and Bears, Homomasculinities and Homofeminism. Stay tuned to another episode of Bear Soup for the exciting conclusion. More bad news for bears. This week, we got, in addition to the news about the sea ice melting at an unprecedented rate, endangering polar bears, we also found out that the international nonprofit World Conservation Union added Asia's sun bear to its red list of the planet's most endangered species, as reported by Roddy Shear, eMagazine.com. Researchers estimate that only 10,000 individual sun bears, the smallest of the world's eight bear species, remain across its Southeast Asian range from India to Indonesia. Quote, Although we still have a lot to learn about the biology and ecology of the species, we are quite certain that it is in trouble. Rob Steinmetz, a bear expert with the Geneva-based World Conservation Union, told reporters, "We estimate that sun bears have declined by at least 30% over the past 30 years and continue to decline at this rate." The major threats affecting the sun bear's population numbers, according to the Steinmetz, include deforestation and habitat loss, as well as poaching for the animal's bile, long used by Chinese traditional medicine practitioners to treat eye and liver ailments, as well as for food and fur. The sun bear is the sixth bear species to make the Red List, meaning only two of the world's eight bear species, the brown bear of the U.S., Canada, and Russia, and the American black bear, are not considered threatened or endangered across their entire ranges. The other vulnerable species on the Red List are China's giant panda, the Asiatic black bear, the sloth bear on the Indian subcontinent, the Andean bear in South America, and the polar bear. The plight of the sun bear and other endangered bears is especially worrisome to many environmentalists, as the health of bears and other large carnivores who rule their respective food chains speaks volumes of the health of the wider ecosystems they inhabit. Steinmetz and other champions of wildlife hope that the added publicity given to the sun bear due to its inclusion on the Red List will spur more people to take action to facilitate a recovery. In Kevin Bowe's film, A Bear's Story, there's a Bears for Bears benefit beer bust for the preservation of four-legged bears. And I have this idea that I'd like to share with you, and I hope you can share with other folks, particularly if you are a member of a bear club anywhere around the nation or around the world. Perhaps some of the fundraising efforts that bear clubs do could actually be directed towards organizations like the National Resources Defense Council and the World Wildlife Fund that are really working hard to ensure the preservation of four-legged bears. So tell me what you think about it. Write to me at bearsoup@gmail.com. And thanks.
Now, did you know that Bear Soup has a new Facebook page? Check it out. You can become a fan of Bear Soup and keep up with the latest episodes. Just go to Facebook and type in Bear Soup. Thanks again. As mentioned on the last episode, Bear Soup has been nominated again for Best of the Bears. So be sure to head to CompleteBear.com to vote for the show. You can vote daily from now until the end of December, so go now! Now! Well, you're probably online anyway, and send some love our way, okay? Mike from The Complete Bear has agreed to announce the winners of the 2009 contest on Bear Soup, and wouldn't it be embarrassing if he made the announcements and we didn't win?
It's the gayest show in the f***ing world!
So, please, vote for Bear Soup in the Complete Bears poll, early and often. Shoutouts go to Music by the Mermen, Pete, also known as Why a Duck, Mike Frisch, The Tall Gals, the folks at Transcending Boundaries who put on a great conference, Professor Tara Broccoli of Mitchell College, The Tall Gals, and as always, Papa Bear Rocco. You've been listening to program number 58 of Bear Soup. Check out the Bear Soup page on my website, www.ronsarisha.com. Bear Soup is news, views, skews, and schmooze for the bear community, with bear author and editor Ron Sarisha named Bear of the Year 2008. I get to say it for still a whole nother month. Bubbles for Bear Soup Hot Tub are powered by our sponsor, Bear Bones Books. Check out their fine literature by bear authors at bearbonesbooks.com, BearBonesBooks.com. Got feedback? Send it to me at bearsoup@gmail.com. That's it for this show. Thanks again for listening to Bear Soup.